Welcome back to the show. Yes, it does come on again. We are back. We are live. We will be taking callers. And it is the alternative media with Patrick Slattery and Don Advo. Don, thank you for coming on the show again.
Dr. Slattery, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be on. And Eric Englund is always a hard act to follow. What an incredibly creative and an incredibly successful guy. Came from nowhere, created a great website, clearly is riding the crest of a great anti-Semitic wave. What more can you say, huh?
Yeah. Hey, did you recognize that theme song?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah, I recognize it. I was a great Rocky and Bullwinkle fan.
Yeah.
Rocket J. Squirrel and Bullwinkle Moose.
And Bullwinkle, what was his middle initial?
I think it was Bullwinkle J. Moose.
Yes, it was Bullwinkle J. Moose. And you know why it was J? Because
no.
The producer was Jay Ward, and it was a joke with Jay Ward. And then the guy who does The Simpsons, he followed suit, and it's Homer J. Simpson and Bartholomew J. Simpson, and everything is J. Everything on most cartoons are J, and it's after the producer, Jay Ward. That little bit of trivia aside, Andrew Anglin and I were talking at the end of the last hour about, when the internet started, it was a great forum for all sorts of small discussions about, why the world isn't what it really seems to be, because we're told that we live in a democracy and we're told that, everybody's is treated equally or if they're not treated equally, it's because of the evil white people. We're told all sorts of things, but reality doesn't seem to square with it. And there were a lot of discussions, and there was discussions about secret governments and, Queen Elizabeth controlling the drug trade and airlines spraying chemicals to pass out of their exhaust instead of, rocket exhaust in order to pacify people and all sorts of – there were all sorts of ideas out there. But there were also some ideas out there that there was a particular ethnic group that was using its ethnic networking and various resources in order to, gain control over our society and some other societies and rule them for their own benefit. And as the internet grew, and also as recent walls of political correctness have come tumbling down in no small part due to Andrew Anglin's work. With more discussion, more open discussion, that latter narrative is the one that seems to be winning out, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
I think so.
I think that the discussion of Jewish power, the discussion of the basic ordering principle of American politics, and we talked about my theory that Jewish power is to politics what gravity is to the physical sciences, a basic ordering principle without which everything is completely chaotic and incomprehensible. You can't study physics without, studying gravity and accounting for gravity's effects. And you can't really study American politics and culture without accounting for Jewish power and the priorities and the way that Jewish power is such an incredibly powerful force. So, yeah, I think the Jewish, I think just because it is supported by reality, people can validate, just like you can do a physical, you can step on a scale and you can measure gravity. Okay, your weight is a measure of the pull of gravity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes my pull is a little more than I would like for it to be, so I have to diet and work out at the gym. But everybody is familiar at some level with the practice of testing a hypothesis. We look around, I talk about this on Stormfront about people I knew in the Soviet Union, and they would read in the Soviet press about how they had a bountiful harvest and the five-year plan had worked and everything was so prosperous and food was so plentiful. And then they go with their ration ticket to get their bread and potatoes. And the guy says, sorry, we have nothing. So you know, your testing of the narrative in the state-controlled press is when the claims of prosperity is when you go to get your ration ticket filled with bread and potatoes and they don't have any. So, you know, people are looking around, and yes, the Jews run Wall Street. Yes, they run Hollywood. Yes, they run all these institutions. Yes, we are fighting trillions of dollars worth of wars for the strategic benefits of the Jewish state of Israel. And I think it is finally dawning on people. And as much as anything, it is Jewish hysteria. I heard this twerpy little guy, Ben Shapiro, Jewish intellectual talk show host out here in California, and he was on the Dennis Prager show, and he was just hysterical, almost beside himself. You know how Jews get so hysterical and they're chattering away, and mm-hmm. and this guy went to Harvard. He got into UCLA at the age of 16, and I guess he got out of Harvard at the age of 24 or something, and he wrote a book, and it was a bestseller. And you know, he's a classic kosher conservative. He's a very, very smart guy, very entertaining, but he is off the rails. Just and Mark Levin, so many of Michael Medved. I mean, these people are just crazy. And I have seen the split, and I've talked about it before, the split within the so-called conservative movement. And it may very well kill the conservative movement, and it's long overdue that the conservative movement was killed. So, you know, we see in the comments sections on the Internet where Jewish policing of the Internet has been overwhelmed by the sheer weight of numbers. In 1954 or 55, there was a movie that came out starring Charlton Heston and Eleanor Parker called The Naked Jungle. Mm-hmm. And it was about, Charlton Heston obviously played the lead, and it was about a European man, a planter in Brazil who had a plantation down there, and the killer ants were being roused. They had something like a 25-year cycle. Every 25 years, they get charged up and they cut a swath through the countryside, you know, 3 miles wide, and they eat and destroy everything in their path. And so he's doing everything he can to try to fight off these ants, and he has a moat around his plantation, and they try to come over on leaves. And then, you know, the moat dries up, and they come across that, and he tries to burn them. And then they, you know, they get through the fire, and then he runs to this dam to blow up the dam so that will flood his whole plantation and kill the ants. And it'll wipe out his plantation, but it'll wipe out the ants, too. And, of course, ultimately he prevails. But I was thinking of how just the sheer mm-hmm. weight of numbers overwhelming the Jewish minders on the Internet and the Jews in talk radio, and how people just don't care anymore. And what Andrew said about this anti-Semitic crap wearing thin. Oh, you can see it on the Internet. You can hear it on talk radio. It's just like all these ants have come up. And you know, it doesn't matter that a human being is, you know, 100 times bigger and 100 times heavier, and you know, you get so many of them, they can't be stopped except by really, really extraordinary means. So I see that the narrative, the discussion of the Jewish question, the issue of Jewish control of so many major institutions, and the ability of Jews to punish people who step outside very carefully defined lines of political and social discourse, those lines are being wiped out. The power of Jews to punish people is not what it was even a year ago. Mm-hmm. And certainly not, I mean, when I first got on the Internet in the year 2000, it was just incredible. I mean, there were Jews everywhere. And they all had this same kind of shrill, rigid tone that they would take. It's like they policed the Internet, and they trolled and patrolled everywhere. And I've seen a back off in that. I've seen a sharp, sharp back off in that. The Jewish policing of the Internet. Mm. So I think these are all very good things, and I think it's a reordering of things. And, you know, everybody's, the whole, I think Trump has contributed enormously with his head-on attack on political correctness, his head-on attack on the mainstream news media. He called them the most dishonest people around. Well, where are people going to go if they can't trust the mainstream media? They're going to go to alternative media. And that's where they are.
That's where we are right now.
And where they have been going, and that is good for us. So if Trump is a shill, please tell me what anti-Zionist candidate he knocked out of the race. Tell me which anti-Zionist candidate he is set up to win against in November. Tell me why it is in the Zionist Jewish interest to have a strong American nationalist charismatic leader who is going to take into Congress on his coattails charismatic, strong nationalist people in Congress. Congress, the United States Congress, the House of Representatives, has saved us from the Senate and saved us from two presidents who wanted to shove amnesty down our throat, George W. Bush and Barack Obama. The Republican Congress rebelled against George W. Bush in the final years of his presidency when he wanted to shove amnesty down our throats, and they rebelled against Obama when he wanted to do his amnesty thing. There was an interesting congressional race in Virginia. Eric Cantor was a Jewish congressman, a big shot in Congress, lined up to be speaker.
Was supposed to be the next speaker. That's right.
He was lined up to be the speaker.
House Majority Leader.
And he was very soft on immigration. He was challenged by David Bratt, and I remember that talk radio. Laura Ingraham got big behind Bratt and Ann Coulter. Mark Levin was big for David Bratt, and they knocked out Eric Cantor. And this was on the eve of a vote for one of these amnesty bills. Now, Jeff Sessions, I heard him on one of these talk radio shows, and he talked about that. He said amnesty was a done deal, and then Cantor got knocked out in the primary, and he said it sent a shockwave through the Republicans in Congress, and suddenly the whole tide turned. Mm-hmm. So when you hear people in our movement say whites should stop voting, if whites had stopped voting in that congressional district, Cantor would still be there. He would likely be the speaker, and however bad the Mexican problem is, it would be much worse. It would be insoluble. So yeah. For those who say Trump is a shill, why are the Jews fighting him as hard as they are? And what
they
political
are.
Figure has survived the kind of withering attack that the Jews have made against Trump? What political candidate has been swept into office under a withering Jewish attack? I'm trying to think of one.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Lindbergh, Charles Coughlin, Barry Goldwater, Robert A. Taft.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another one, I forget. But in any event, when they get their teeth into people and they try to destroy people, it's generally pretty much the end. It was largely a Jewish operation that got rid of Richard Nixon, although there was collaboration from others.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, they got rid of Senator Charles Percy. They got rid of Cynthia McKinney more recently. They got rid of Joseph McCarthy, yeah. You asked which... Jim Traficant from Ohio. You asked which anti-Zionist candidate did Trump knock out, as a Jewish shill for Hillary. And Alex Jones has stated that, he knocked out Rand Paul. But, of course, the reason he knocked out Rand Paul is because Rand Paul was way too timid on all of the issues. He was way... Rand Paul would say privately that the United States shouldn't be pushing Russia into a corner, but Trump says it publicly. There's nothing that Rand Paul is saying that Trump wasn't saying louder and more openly.
It didn't take Donald Trump to knock out Rand Paul. He was a very weak, timid candidate. And wanted to reach out to all these blacks and Mexicans, and he talked about how discriminatory the justice system was and all that. I think Rand Paul has been a very mixed blessing for our party.
Yeah, and his father wasn't the great savior either, but Rand Paul's not his father even. Now, the other question you could ask is, which anti-Zionist candidate could possibly represent us without, you know, if Trump, if we no longer have Trump, who could do that? Who would have the financial resources and the media resources and the celebrity? Who would have these resources to pick up where Trump leaves off if something were to happen to him?
Well, the better question is, who would, if Trump had never declared for the race, who would be the nominee today? I think it would probably be Jeb Bush.
Well, that he was the Las Vegas odds maker's favorite, that's for sure.
Would have I mean, how are the Jews better off with Donald Trump than they would have been with Jeb Bush? And I believe that an election of either Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush is equally useful to the Zionists. I don't think they really have either one is going to serve Jewish interests. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I don't think it really matters to them for their main issues, because look at the wars. Hillary is gung-ho for the no-fly zone over Syria and for, calling Putin a dictator. She's compared Putin to Hitler, and Bush is the same way. Bush was all, get tough with Russia. We are so close to World War III, and this is something that doesn't get talked enough even on the alternative media, but we're really close to war with Russia. We've got troops amassing at their border. You know, we're sending battle brigades to the Baltic states and to Poland, and this missile system to Romania and Moldova, which used to be part of the Soviet Union. It doesn't get talked about. And the one candidate who really is bringing this up is Donald Trump. We tend to focus on his position on immigration and a lot of other issues, but this is something that a lot of people, including all these Sanders supporters, could really get behind Donald Trump, because he is the peace candidate. It's a great blessing. I'll say that it's a great blessing that you have somebody who can really appeal to such a broad swath of the population. He hasn't appealed to a lot of people yet, just because they don't know about it, because nobody's talking about it. But in past elections and past decades, you've had a big peace movement. A lot of the electorate that chooses their candidates based on who's most likely to get into a war. And Donald Trump is the peace candidate, and Hillary is the war candidate. And people, it's not going completely unnoticed. You have people like Susan Sarandon, who says she's more afraid of Hillary's warmongering than Donald Trump's wall.
She did say that. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, and I think there's a great potential for that. These Sanders people, they are going to a lot of them just are at least telling pollsters now. A large portion of them are telling pollsters that they could never vote for Hillary. So what are they going to do? Are they going to stay home? Are they going to vote for some third party candidate, or are they going to vote for Trump? And I think what's going to happen is, Hillary, she was the Secretary of State, and she's trying to attack Donald Trump on being, soft on Russia. But Donald Trump, I mean, he's not soft on anything. He's pretty hardcore. He's just not stupid. And why should he get into a war with Russia? He'll bury Hillary on these issues, and he'll take a lot of the Sanders supporters with him, even if they don't like him on immigration, if they don't like him on gun control. A lot of people are going to prioritize war and peace, especially if the upcoming debate exposes the fact that we're really close to war, a completely unnecessary war, and it's a war that Zionists are pushing us into, because this is almost completely a Jewish project, the people who are pushing the war.
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood.
We will be back after the break.
Hey, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Thank you.
monsters. This is the alternative media with Patrick Slattery, and I'm here with Don Advo. Don Advo, who is an avid reader, he reads a lot of books, and books can make a big difference, can't they?
Oh, most definitely. They most definitely can.
Talk about some big books from the past.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Some big books from the past that have really changed things.
Well, we were kind of talking about this during the break, and I've talked about it before, and that is what I call political flashpoint books. Those are books in history that have had a dramatic and an immediate impact on the course of history. And there are two American flashpoint books that I come to mind. One is Common Sense, published in January of 1776 by Thomas Paine, and it made the case, a very, very strong case, for American independence from the British Empire. It achieved bestseller status almost immediately. Within a few months, it sold 300,000 copies in a colonial America that had a population of 2.5 million. What a huge impact it had. Second book, and I have a little more personal experience with this, was a book published in 1964 called A Choice Not an Echo by the great Republican activist and American patriot Phyllis Schlafly. And A Choice Not an Echo was published in January of that year, a presidential election year when Barry Goldwater was chosen as the standard bearer of the Republican Party. And Phyllis Schlafly wrote an expose of the how the corrupt Rockefeller liberal Eastern establishment had stolen the nomination of the Republican Party going back many, many years, and had basically neutered the Republican Party to the extent that in the 1940 presidential election, the Republican standard bearer was actually a lifelong Democrat named Wendell Willkie, who had no history in the Republican Party at all. Such was the liberal control of the Republican Party. And I read A Choice Not an Echo. It motivated me into political activism, and I heard Phyllis Schlafly interview on television some years ago. She's in her 90s now. Mm-hmm. She has endorsed Donald Trump, and she said people still come up to her. Of course, they're men now in their 60s, and they say, "Oh, Mrs. Schlafly, I read your book as a teenager, A Choice Not an Echo, and that's how I got into politics."
Wow.
And the reason I mention these things is my personal view is that the time is ripe for a political flashpoint book for the election year 2016. Mm-hmm. I think it would need to come out no later than the 1st of July. And I think it would help. I think this is such a significant election. There has been such a change of public consciousness on the part of the electorate that such a book would be enormously beneficial. Mm. What say you, Patrick Slattery?
I say, yeah, if David Duke wasn't so busy with other things, if he could come out with an abridged and updated edition of Jewish Supremacism, that would really fit the bill. Okay, we have Frank from North Carolina. Frank, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, it was a great first 2 hours, and I really enjoyed the first hour and the second hour interview with Andrew Anglin. I'm not real familiar with him because I'm not on the Internet very much, but I've heard him about half a dozen times or more with Dr. Mm-hmm. Duke and once or more with you and a couple other places, and he's a very intelligent young man. I really enjoy it. I did have to point out, though, take issue with one or two things he said, but, Alex Jones really is pushing he really is on board, has been for some time with the Trump phenomenon, and that's working, I think, to Donald Trump's favor. But I don't listen to him that much anymore because, be honest with you, I just can't really take it anymore. But sometimes I'll listen to the first 10 or 15 minutes, or I'll be, oh, I wonder what Alex is doing today, and I'll cut it on maybe in the second hour or something. And I mean, it's constant promotion of this idea that the Nazis have been in control ever since the end of World War II. They secretly took over the intelligence community, everything, the government of the United States, and the Nazis are secretly hiding in the shadows, biding their time. I mean, he's pushing that daily. I mean, he probably spends 20 minutes every day on his show. That's just spot-checking. It's the Nazis, and Andrew's right. He will not talk about the Jews.
Right, and you hear other people echo that in one way or another, you know, referring to Nazis, And you know, who does that benefit to talk about the Nazis when you know, we have all this Jewish power going on all around us? Okay. Hey, you want to hang on, Frank? If you have something else to say, we'll talk to you after the break.
I'll let you guys go. Thanks.
Okay. So we'll be back after the break.
Go right to the source and ask the horse. He'll give you the answer that you endorse. He's always on a steady course. Talk to Mr. Ed. Heep-o yakety yak the street.
Welcome back to the alternative media. That's my Monty Python voice. This is the alternative media with Patrick Slattery and Don Advo. And getting back to the book theme, another book that may well have been pretty consequential was Ann Coulter's book, Adios America. I know that you were talking about it on Stormfront last summer after it came out. We were talking about it on the David Duke Show. And at the time I found a little bit of fault with it in that it focused so much on Teddy Kennedy and, you know, the motivation for the open borders being to ensure a permanent Democratic majority in American politics. Whereas, you know, David Duke and I agreed that the real force behind the open borders was the, you know, organized Jewish community, and people like the leaders would be Senator Jacob Javits, a Republican senator from New York, and Congressman Emanuel Sellers, who actually introduced the legislation, and that the motivation wasn't, partisan advantage. Javits himself was a Republican, but it was really to make sure that you would not have a European majority in America, so you could not have any kind of nationalism that would unite the country in a way that would be contrary to Jewish interests. That was our conclusion. But having said that, the book I still think was very significant. Within a couple of weeks of the book, Donald Trump announced his candidacy, and he focused on the immigration issue. And, you know, at the time, Coulter said that she had sent that book to Donald Trump and that he had read it, and he may well have. And even though we identify the immigration issue with Donald Trump so strongly right now, it certainly seemed very plausible last summer that it featured as prominently as it did in his announcement speech, because it was fresh on his mind from her book. What do you think about that, Don?
Well, I think it probably was. And, you know, talking about books that influenced wars and elections and things like that, I Googled Adios America, and I look at some of the, you know, the reviews, the things that people said about it. We were talking about Ben Shapiro, the hysterical anti-Trump Jewish intellectual who is frantic over the prospect of Donald Trump building a wall and defending America's borders. This is what he had to say about Adios America when it came out last year. He said, quote, Coulter's argument that the media and our politicians conspire to keep information from us about the effects of mass immigration from non-Western countries and that such immigration will destroy the fabric of the country is virtually unassailable. Ben Shapiro. Wow. Talk about being on both sides of every issue. Isn't that interesting? David Frum, the Atlantic magazine. David Frum is a Jewish intellectual.
The person who coined the term evil, axis of evil.
Was that David Frum?
He was a George Bush speechwriter. That's right.
Okay. David Frum says, this is what David Frum said. The phrase political book of the year is usually an empty compliment, but if the phrase ever described any book, Adios America is it. In its pages, Donald Trump found the message that would convulse the Republican primary and upend the dynastic hopes of former frontrunner Jeb Bush. Perhaps no single writer has had such immediate impact on a presidential election since Harriet Beecher Stowe. Mm-hmm. David Frum in the Atlantic. So isn't this interesting that these Jews talk on one side of an issue, and then when there is a candidate who promises to actually do something about that issue, they suddenly switch sides very, very emphatically. I think that's enormously interesting. I hadn't noticed that before, but Shapiro and Frum were very complimentary of that book. And now that Trump is committed to carrying out the wall and actually defending the sovereignty against the invasion, they have changed position and turned on him. Isn't that pretty telling?
Yeah, well, I think it. I mean, it goes along with my idea of the system really being rigged, and the two sides, the conservative side and the progressive side, really just being kind of Jewish designed bills of goods. And sure, there's a lot of fireworks, and it looks like they're really, really fighting tooth and nail against each other. But I've come to the conclusion that one side is charged with pushing forward the Jewish domestic agenda. That would be the Democrats. And the other side is charged with pushing forward the Jewish international agenda, and that would be the Republicans. And that the Republicans, they are supposed to fight against the Jewish agenda, the Jewish domestic agenda, but not to the point where they're going to win. They're supposed to lose. So they're supposed to make objections and, you know, have a filibuster or whatever, but it's kind of preordained they're going to lose. And the Democrats are supposed to whine and cry about the wars and, make empty gestures, but let them go ahead, and that's what you see. And so you have the Jewish intellectuals who aren't just front men, but the ones who are very much behind the agenda. And sure, so Ben Shapiro or David Frum, they're going to be critical of immigration as long as it's the fix is in, as long as they know that immigration is going to continue. They can put up the show of having of opposition to it. But then when somebody like Trump comes along and all of a sudden there is a real prospect that the borders are going to be closed to immigration, then their true colors come out. And I think it would be the same way on the Democratic side regarding wars.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's like what we talked about. I think that when it's like the news story about the bountiful harvest in the Soviet Union, and then you can't get any food at the ration department. Ann Coulter has presented things in such a way that people are really relying on it and acting on it. Although, in fairness, there was pretty strong opposition to illegal immigration before she ever published her book. It came after both of the votes on I wish the book had come out 20 years ago, frankly, or even 10 years ago instead of last year.
It came out probably at the right time. If it had come out in 2014 and you didn't have Trump about to announce, well, I don't know what difference it would have made. Eugene McCarthy, the senator from Minnesota, best known for his successful primary challenge to President Johnson in 1968, the anti-Vietnam War senator, he came out with a book in, I guess, the late 1980s that was very anti-immigration. And he was one of the people, he was actually a co-sponsor of the 1965 immigration bill, yet he came out 20 years later with this book saying he had been duped. And, there was a mea culpa involved in it. He was admitting he was taking some responsibility, but he was explaining how it was that he was fooled by this. And, that book was it didn't only focus on immigration, because it also focused on trade. It also focused on wars. It would have been a great book for Donald Trump. But it came out, and it didn't come out at the right time, and nobody remembers it. I have it. I have an autographed copy from the senator himself, but, it did not make a splash. So timing's also important, and it may well be that Ann Coulter's book came out right at the right time.
Well, I think it probably did. I'm just reading the review that it got in National Review a year ago, and it was very favorably reviewed. Again, isn't that interesting? A magazine which has dedicated itself to the destruction of a candidate, Donald Trump, who has promised to defend this country against foreign invasion, they complimented Ann Coulter when she wrote a book describing that invasion. But now that a candidate comes along that is really going to do something, they have completely flip-flopped. Mm-hmm. So, boy, that's interesting. I should go back. I should probably go back and do that more often and see how these people have flip-flopped. But boy, it really showed this. I think the split in, I wouldn't even call it the conservative movement anymore. But I guess you have to call it something. The neocon thing. It's as though William Buckley's role was to define so-called responsible conservatism and to destroy irresponsible conservatives. And in many ways, the National Review and William Buckley's Inquisition destroyed more conservative careers and lives than even the liberals did. Mm. And that he was really, you should have called him William F. Turncoat Jr.
Wow.
But you can see... You can see how the tradition, the legacy, that's the word I want to use, the William F. Buckley legacy of purging so-called irresponsible people from the movement has been carried on by the current National Review. Daily Stormer, that's where I saw that. Daily Stormer has a really great piece
and
on
that's Andrew
National
Anglin's
Review.
Site. Which yeah, I mistakenly Andrew referred Anglin's to site. As Stormfront, which is you're affiliated with.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I'm glad you corrected that.
So
sometimes I get confused about who I'm connected with.
Yeah, we get confused. It's confusing. But so you saw this on the Daily Stormer.
Yeah, the Stormer has a really, really great analysis of the role of National Review. And but you know, you look at it and you see how these people have flip flopped. You know, these are people we thought were our friends as recently as a year ago. You know, Ben Shapiro and David Frum and the National Review. Now they've completely revealed themselves to be complete traitors and complete turncoats. And, you know, if it hadn't been for Donald Trump's candidacy, we wouldn't know this. I mean, I might know it, and, you know, insiders like you and David Duke and Andrew Anglin, but rank-and-file conservatives would never have seen with their own eyes the enormous flip-flop within the so-called conservative movement. And that, I think, is an extraordinary benefit of the Trump candidacy.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Ann Coulter, and she was being interviewed on the BBC just a few days ago, and she was being asked about the discourse in America and, you know, about Donald Trump's statements on immigration and, you know, calling for a shutdown of Muslim immigration. And she was defending Donald Trump. And the BBC interviewer said, well, what if he had said such a thing about the Jews? And she said, not the Jews again. And you think back just a couple of years ago when Rick Sanchez from CNN is interviewed on a much more minor radio show, and he says something about John Stewart being Jewish, or John Stewart, and insinuating he's Jewish. Yeah, very powerless people. A lot of people, let me tell you, everybody at CNN is a lot like John Stewart. And got fired the very next day. And of course, Ann Coulter, you know, during one of the Republican debates, she tweets something, you know, when they're talking, when the other candidates are talking about how much they love Israel, she actually tweeted using an F word about the Jews. And she had, well, she doesn't work for CNN, but she hasn't lost her syndicated column. She's getting away with it. And I think this shows that let's just say for a second that we might be exaggerating Jewish power and the role of Jews in our society. Maybe we're exaggerating it, but you can talk about the NRA. You can talk about the Cuba lobby. You can talk about all sorts of. You can talk about white people all you want. White men. You can say the most vicious things about white men. But you have not been able to say anything about Jews. Maybe Israel, maybe Zionism, but to say Jews, you couldn't do that without being Rick Sanchez. And now, not so much. Now things are starting to change. And, you know, why should Jews alone have this type of immunity from any type of, you know, observation or scrutiny? But it looks like things are changing.
I think they are.
And that is perhaps that's really the story of the year. You know, if Donald Trump becomes elected, that's the story of the year. But maybe the story of 2017 is going to be, you know, the beginning of the end of Jewish power in America. We can only hope. I don't care if Jews have a certain amount of power, but I don't want Jewish tyranny. And what we have is Jewish tyranny. And really is a tyranny. That's the difference. If they were simply, you know, jockeying for their own interest in a arena, in a racetrack where all other groups are allowed to jockey for their interests and, you know, that may the best horse win, that would be one thing. But we don't have that. We have a tyranny, and you're not allowed to criticize them, and everybody's allowed to gang up on the white majority, and it is, and then they are riding our white zombie corpse to world domination, and really, you know, driving the world into what could be total destruction, because we can't solve any of these huge problems we have, whether you're talking about environment, whether you're talking about war. We can't do it as long as you have a global Zionist elite that is ruling by divide and conquer, because there's so many issues where people really do need to cooperate with each other. And in an atmosphere of divide and conquer, that can't happen.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. When you have an atmosphere of divide and conquer, you have divided people, and it's very difficult for anything productive to happen. So I think we're living in one of the most exciting times of my lifetime. I can't recall, except for the Barry Goldwater election of 64. When I was very much younger then, I was a teenager and felt like I was very much part of some kind of historic endeavor. It didn't amount to much in the final analysis. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be the most historic presidential election of my lifetime.
I sure think so. Okay, we will be back with the last segment. The last hour of the alternative media. Show. This is the Alternative Media with Patrick Slattery and Don Advo. And Don, that is the theme song to the TV show The Saint. That was with Roger Moore before he was James Bond. Did you ever see that show?
No, I never did.
Okay. I was a big Saint enthusiast, and I've gone back in, you know, more recently and looked at them, and they still stand up in a way. You know, they were It was a similar character to the character he played in James Bond. He was upper class, independently wealthy British gentleman, and he went around and helped people. Most of the episodes took place in London, and they were mostly they weren't filmed on location. They were filmed in a studio, but they still reflected Britain. And of course, you know, London in 1963 or 1967, it was English. there were sometimes you'd have characters who were European. There was once a West Indian boxer, but you never had, you know, there were no Pakistanis, there were no Muslims there. And it wasn't because they couldn't be seen on TV. It's because they weren't there. And I would wonder what Simon Templar would think if he drove his Austin Martin around Britain, around London today with its Muslim mayor. There's been such a massive transformation. And we're only talking about 50 years.
Yeah, not much time at all. Very short period of time. You know, the British, the white British had that island for thousands of years. And in less than, you know, in about half a century, it was all given away. It's going to be a hard fight to get it back. Very, very hard fight.
Yeah, I went in the mid-1980s, and there were neighborhoods that had a lot of non-British people from various parts of the empire and places that weren't part of the empire. Most of the other cities were still pretty British. I went to Wolverhampton, a small city near, I guess, between Birmingham and Manchester, and it had a very large Sikh population from India. So you started seeing things changing, but it's just amazing how fast things have changed in Paris and Brussels and these other areas. And, you know, getting things back. You know, there's going to be a lot of water under the bridge no matter what happens. There's getting things back, but there's also getting control of the situation. And, you know, sometimes I hear people talk about the desirability of Balkanization and you know, whites fleeing to some little homeland somewhere. But then what do you leave behind? You leave behind you know, all of these power assets, including nuclear weapons. Are you suggesting leaving them behind in the hands of the very people who disappropriated us in the first place? That really becomes a question. But it's a question we probably won't have to deal with because we've got great prospects for 2016.
Well, I think we do. I think. You know, the consolidation of these people, these aliens in the cities, talked about this a number of times on Stormfront and on other radios, is not all that bad because it'll make the cities fairly easy to bomb. I mean, if you bombed Los Angeles, carpet bombed it back to the Stone Age, you're not going to kill that many Americans. There aren't that many Americans here. So in a certain sense...
All right. Hey, this is Tudonet, French comic. You might want to check him out. Check out ziowatch.com. Check out the National Bugle. No, nationalbugle.com. Nationalbugle.com. That would be interesting. Want to go there for news, and we'll see you next week. The